The last few times, I've been focusing especially on some of the challenges to our practice. Two times ago, I gave a lot of attention to how we work with reactivity. That's been a common theme. And I use reactivity really as a translation of dukkha, but particularly pointing to two forms, grasping and pushing away. Those are really sometimes we speak in code and we talk about greed and aversion. Those are really expressions of these two forms of reactivity. So we've looked at that. Last time, we looked particularly at how to work with challenges, both the challenges that are more personal or relational, the ones that are there in our lives quite directly. And then also the kind of challenges that we feel in relation to these larger events occurring, and many of which are occurring at crisis levels, whether it's COVID or the fires or or the fires or the climate emergency. And then we just as well have our normal ongoing challenges of economic inequality, racism, political polarization, dysfunctional Congress. We probably could add a few others. So we looked at those kind of challenges and how to practice with them. And people actually named challenges that were present, in their personal lives. And people named quite personally some of what was up for them. We had probably six or seven people name issues like the recent death of a partner, or illness in the family, or being with the prospect not too long from now of illness and death, or again, different kinds of challenges for one's children or oneself. And we focused on ways of practicing. I gave 10 basic ways of practicing, which is kind of a compendium of all the things in our repertoire. Practices like being mindful, knowing the level of intensity of the challenges so we can act accordingly, mindfulness, investigation, naming what's happening, heart practices to balance the challenges and give ourselves compassion and so forth. And I wanted this time to, in a way, complement the emphasis that's been there on different kinds of challenges, personal challenges, just the normal challenges of the distracted mind or the reactive mind. And I wanted to focus this evening on awakening and the qualities that are conducive to awakening. I think this is a very important emphasis in our time, really complementary to the emphasis on working with challenges. I think we deeply need both. It's very crucial in a time of a lot of challenges not to forget about awakened qualities and not to forget about awakening. And I've been talking with a few friends about the idea, what would it be like if we had 1 million people who were pretty stable with awakening and were using that stability to address the challenges of our world? Maybe some of us feel called in that way. I I've sometimes thought of training programs which would have those two tracks. Sort of deep Dharma focusing on awakening and skill in social engagement and working with challenges. To me, that's a very compelling calling for our times. And so we don't want to just focus, I think, on working with the challenges. They really go together. We want to remember awakening and remember awakening for all beings and our dedication of that. If you want to, you could call that awakening for all beings FAB, short for fabulous. For all beings, FAB. That's a partly an inside joke with one member of the Sangha whom I won't name right now. But we've been talking a lot about for all beings and how fabulous it is. Okay, so much for humor. I may not be humorous the rest of the time. We'll see. Anyway, so that can be a kind of a calling to awaken. And I want to speak some about awakening and about the ways that we cultivate awakening. Again, many of us are familiar with some of the teachings about awakening. It's helpful to remember that the aim of practice is always awakening. Again, different words are used in the text, in the passages of the Buddha. Sometimes it's awakening. I think you know that the very word Buddha comes from a root, B-U-D-H, Bud, which was the ordinary word for waking up in the morning. That was the metaphor that he used. It's interesting that it's also being used these days in the context of racial awareness. You know, people talk about being woke. That's interesting. Anyway, but awakening in the context of the Buddha is one way to talk about it. Also, sometimes there's the word used, vimutti. The word for awakening is bodhi. The word vimutti is usually translated as liberation. And always the aim of awakening or liberation, the main way that is talked about throughout the discourses of the Buddha is awakening from greed, hatred, and delusion, or greed, aversion, and delusion, from reactivity and the underlying ignorance which makes reactivity possible. And so it's talked about as awakening, it's talked about as liberation, and all of the core practices are designed for awakening. Sometimes in Western practice, we forget about awakening, and we, maybe in our own minds as well, sometimes we have the sense that the practice is there to make us a little more aware or a little kinder or a little more compassionate. And that's valuable, but there's a danger, and I think that danger is strong in the West, of forgetting about awakening or being satisfied with being a little calmer. And of course, developmentally, that's important and it's significant and not to be dismissed. But actually in the insight world over the last 40 or 50 years, teachers have not always talked about awakening. You know, and with the emphasis on mindfulness is often at the center. And sometimes there can be a forgetting of awakening. I'm partly wanting to remind us of that and invite us to have that aspiration and have that understanding. One of the models that describes the qualities of awakening, as I mentioned, related to the guided practice, is the teaching of the factors of awakening. Mindfulness, and then three activating qualities, investigation or inquiry, energy, joy or rapture, and then three stabilizing qualities, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. This is from the Dhammapada. Those who fully cultivate the factors of awakening give up grasping, enjoy non-clinging. They have destroyed the toxins. They are luminous and completely liberated in this life. So we get a sense of what awakening is from the Buddha, primarily negatively, actually. It's the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion, or greed, aversion, and delusion. From that passage, we get a sense, there's some sense of luminosity. But the main ways that awakening is talked about is in terms of working through all the reactivity and underlying ignorance that we have. And that's why working with the challenges is so crucial, because that's the work. So there really are, it's almost like there are two dimensions of practice. There's the cultivation of these beautiful qualities. And sometimes we hang out with them more or less. And then there's the working with the so-called stuff. Has anybody found stuff in your meditation practice? The so-called stuff that we, you know, we could call the second way of practicing, we sometimes call it purification. And so there's on the one hand, sometimes a hanging out and a being with the beautiful qualities, and sometimes there's a being with our stuff, our greed, aversion, our confusion. And it's interesting because in my own practice, especially initially, I would go back and forth between cycles of one or the other. Maybe you've experienced that. My first retreats that I did were more with the beautiful qualities. I could experience levels of silence and peace and insight that I had never known before. And that was predominant for the first few retreats. And I thought it was onward and upward to enlightenment. Anyone ever had that view that you're just onward and upward to enlightenment? Anyway, that was my sense. And then a retreat came and I had fear for 10 days in a row and hung out with it. And I could watch the dissolution of my self-image and my sense of self. Sometimes that was part of the fear. And then the next retreat, beautiful. So it kind of alternated like that, but it's helpful to know that those are kind of like two cycles of our practice, two dimensions of our practice. And if we're going through more of a hard time, working with challenges, being with purification, it can be really, really crucial to deliberately bring in the awakened qualities. Might be to bring in the heart qualities, loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. One of the teachings about vimutti or liberation, again, one of the terms that's used something as a cognate of awakening, is that in the text, there are two forms of liberation. One comes especially through concentration and through practices like the heart practices. And that's called temporary liberation. When we're in loving kindness or compassion and really solid with that, there's a kind of temporary freedom that we have. And it can be the same thing when we have a temporary, quite a concentrated place, or even when we have very strong mindfulness for a period of time, it can feel like in this moment, I am free, right? And it's very valuable. But that teaching says that actually the deeper form of liberation and the more permanent form only comes with wisdom and the cutting through of all ignorance. So we have these different teachings, primarily more negative about awakening, but it's very clear that the awakening is the goal. Awakening, liberation, touching nibbana. It's talked about using different terms, and there are different teachings that all point in that way. But it's not so clear, mostly, what it would feel like actually to have awakening present. There's some passages, very few of them, where the Buddha does talk about what the experience of awakening is like. And it's actually quite similar to what we find in some later Buddhist traditions. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Thai forest tradition on the one hand, and then Tibetan Dzogchen and Mahamudra on the other, because there's a sense of what awakening is like that's very, very similar to what we find in a few passages of the Buddha. And there's in these passages, there's a kind of awareness or consciousness. The word, you know, the word in the Pali is vijnana. There is a kind of consciousness which is said to be signless, boundless, and luminous. And it seems to be equivalent to awakening or liberation when one is in this kind of state. And this was actually an emphasis in the retreat that a number of people did just now at Spirit Rock. And it's an emphasis in many retreats that I teach. So here's a passage from the Buddha. Where consciousness is signless, boundless, all luminous, that's where earth, water, fire, and air find no footing. There both long and short, small and great, fair and foul, their name and form are wholly destroyed. So this kind of state of awakening is said to be signless, which really means it's beyond concepts. And this points to really the importance of concentration, especially as an awakening factor, because concentration makes it possible to increasingly have times when we live without concepts and are free of concepts and mental constructions, social constructions, and so forth. And the state of awakening is beyond these constructs. It's also boundless. You know, and the heart qualities like loving kindness also go in this direction. It's boundless, which means there's a kind of awareness which goes towards infinity, and we could say is non-localized. We have awareness, but there's not really a central me having that awareness. That's what the experience of awakening is like. And I think many of us have had these kind of experiences, maybe in the wilds, by the ocean, or in the mountains or forest, or just in a moment, sometimes in the midst of a very, very strong sense of love with another person. These kind of experiences can happen where we go into something like this boundless state, this luminous state, this state beyond concepts. How many of you have known at least briefly something like that? Yeah. So that's important, because this isn't, this is actually taken to be our basic nature. And all the stuff is an overlay. That's why later Buddhist traditions talk about Buddha nature as being our fundamental way of being. And there are passages also by the Buddha where he says that there is a brightly shining quality of mind and heart, which is always shining, but it gets covered over by greed, aversion, and ignorance. And that's what we uncover in these practices. And there are other traditions that open this up. And this is where I want to, I'm going to have a little bit of a slideshow to have some images from these two wonderful traditions that also bring out this quality of what we might call awakened awareness more. So I'm going to do a screen share and take you first to the Thai forest tradition. So in a moment, you'll be in Thailand. We've taken care of all the COVID precautions, so don't worry. And here we go. Okay, we're in Bangkok, just to give you a little flavor of being in Thailand. This is at a temple in Bangkok, another huge, probably, I don't know, 40, 50 foot Buddha, a temple. Get a sense of the flavor. This was the capital, the ancient capital, Ayutthaya in central Thailand. Another image from Ayutthaya. So there was, for much of the recent period in Thailand, most Thai monks and most Thai Buddhists did not really meditate so much. There was a small group of wandering monks who did meditation. And it was out of this that the Thai forest tradition developed, which has really brought forth a sense of this awakening being possible. Many of you know that there were actually, accounts in the traditions of Southeast Asian Buddhism, which said that awakening is no longer possible. It was possible in the past, but it's no longer possible. And in this tradition that we call the Thai forest tradition, they brought out the possibility of awakening. The person who was really most instrumental is Achan Mun, 1870 to 1949. He wandered all over Thailand. He spoke about what he called the primal mind. And listen to this passage and contemplate its resonance with what I read from the Buddha. The primal mind is radiant and clear by nature, but is darkened because of corruptions, presumably greed and aversion and ignorance. One of his students was a great practitioner named Meichi Chow. There was a biography of her, and in it, it talks about her quality of awakening. Meichi Chow had investigated and understood conceptual phenomena so thoroughly that the clear, bright essence no longer made conscious contact with them. In other words, she was beyond constructs. There was signless quality to her awareness. Thought and imagination within the mind had come to a complete halt. The mind's essential knowing nature stood out alone on its own, except for an exceedingly refined awareness, an awareness that suffused the entire cosmos, yet a sense of the boundless quality Absolutely nothing appeared. Mind transcended conditions of time and space. A luminous essence of being that seemed boundless and yet wondrously empty permeated everything throughout the universe. Everything seemed to be filled by a subtle quality of knowing as if nothing else existed. Cleansed of the things that clouded and obscured its all-encompassing essence, her mind revealed its true power. This is actually an image of the book about her life, which you can get. I think you can get that online and just download it. Another student of Achan Moon was Achan Mahabua. This is him as a young man. And he talked about this quality as well. I got to meet him because I stayed at his monastery for a period of time in the 1990s. And this is what he said. When the mind becomes a pure mind, the center disappears. We can't say that the mind is above or below or in any particular spot. It's an awareness that is pure, that is subtle, profound, above and beyond any and all conventions. So we have that sense of boundlessness, being beyond concepts. This is the sitting hall at his monastery. This is the forest. People practiced in cottages in the forest. There's showers and the toilets. This is a younger Donald at the monastery with one of the teachers right behind me. This is a cottage in the forest where one was staying. And I think this is actually where I stayed. This is my cottage that I stayed at for a period of time. And the last teacher is probably well known, also a very brief student of Achan Moon. Achan Cha, the teacher of Jack Kornfield and Achan Semedo, Tanisara and Kitasaro, a lot of people who are around. Here is an image you may have seen, probably from around 1970. Jack Kornfield on the right, Achan Semedo in the middle, Achan Cha seated. And here's Achan Cha at IMS. This is a retreat that I attended, got to study with him. And he used very similar language. He talked about what he called the old mind, the original mind. He says, we're practicing to reach the mind, the old mind. This original mind is unconditioned. In it, there is no good or bad, long or short, black or white, so beyond concepts. The nature of the original mind is unwavering. It is tranquil. Practice really means searching to find our way back to the original state, the old thing. It is finding our old home, the original mind that does not waver and change following various phenomena. It is by nature perfectly peaceful. It is something that is already within us. There's some other images of Achan Cha. And you can see me. I don't know if you can see. If you look at the monks on the right, his shoulder, and there's a head of a young man right around his left shoulder, that's Donald. Can you make it out? Okay. Okay, so, and I'll just give a few other, few more slides, just bringing out some of the Tibetan traditions. You'll find something very, very similar in the Dzogchen and Mahamudra tradition, something like this signless, boundless, luminous awareness as the goal of practice and taken to be the nature of the awakened mind, the nature of awakening, and presumably, not always said, but presumably the Buddha lived in this kind of awakened mind without any interruptions. This is one of the great Dzogchen teachers and writers, Longchenpa from Tibet, 14th century. He said this, "Awakened mind is by nature primordially pure. The true nature of phenomena is such that there is nothing to discard and adopt." One thing that the Tibetans do, they say that this quality of awakening also touches phenomena, not just the mind, but also phenomena. In the Dzogchen tradition, it's said that all phenomena are primordially pure. They partake of the nature of awakening. There is nothing that comes and goes, nothing to achieve by trying. Rather, the sun and moon of utter lucidity arise when one rests naturally in the spacious expanse that is the true nature of phenomena. And I'll give one more. This is from a Mahamudra teacher from the 16th century, Dagpo Tashi Namgyal. And from one of his texts, there are five lines that I love and that I actually have used for probably 10 years in my own practice that very simply describe the nature of this awakened awareness. Open like the sky, pervasive like the earth, unshakable like a mountain, shining like a flame, lucid like a crystal. So I hope those trips to Thailand and Tibet were fun. We're back. We didn't have to go through customs. Here we are. But I wanted to give that flavor. So the question is, how do we practice to cultivate awakening? And again, the main answer to that question really is the way we basically practice all the time. The main answer to that question is just keep developing the factors of awakening, the mindfulness, investigation, joy, energy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Again, there are other models. Keep developing the variants of mindfulness. I would add, keep developing the heart qualities. And particularly when there are challenges, this is something I learned to see much more clearly from doing the teaching I've done over the last 15 years plus on transforming the judgmental mind, a lot of which is going into challenges and difficult territory. When difficult territory and challenges are predominant, it's really crucial to deliberately arouse awakened qualities and hang out there. Could be any of the qualities I named. It could also be, I add to my instructions, being with beauty. Beauty tends to arouse joy. Be with beauty. Do that as a regular practice if you're going through a challenging period. And so the main way of cultivating awakening is to keep on practicing to develop these core qualities, the ones that are named in our talks by our teachers, in the texts, and so forth. And then there also are some special techniques that are given in traditions like the Thai forest tradition, Dzogchen and Mahamudra. There's some special techniques which I think were taught some in the recent retreat. I teach them in my settling, seeing, and luminous awareness retreat. These are special techniques which help us access. I think I've used them a few times in our meetings. These are special techniques which let us access awakened awareness for a short time. I think maybe I can try to bring these in next time I teach. How many would like that? I think they require some introduction. But they're basically very simple techniques that let us access initially for 5 seconds or 10 seconds at a time. Some of this way of experiencing the boundless nature of awareness and the boundless the concept-free nature of experience that we can have access to. And so there are techniques, there are a lot of them. There are many of them. I think my colleague, Diana Winston, recently had a day long at Spirit Rock where she taught, she taught a number of them. She has a book called The Little Book of Being, which I don't know, has 40 or 50. There are a lot of techniques that one can use. And you actually just need one. And the sequence is that you work with that one technique, you start accessing awakened awareness. And as you start accessing it, especially if you keep on going with the concentration practice and some of the other practices, the awakened awareness will slowly, usually, develop more stability. Often we can develop that stability first in meditation and then bring it more and more into daily life. That's sort of a long-term goal, but it's very possible. And so really what I would invite is, if this inspires you, then I would say bring into your intentions before you sit the intention to awaken. Let that be alive for you. Bring in these qualities that we call the factors of awakening and related qualities. Focus on them, invite them to develop. Notice when they're there. And then at a certain point, you might typically work with a teacher who can give some of these access routes that can help open up the territory further and let awakening stabilize more and more. As that happens, by the way, the purification keeps on occurring. It's not like you touch awakening. Okay, end of the story. The purification keeps happening. They're really almost like these dual related processes. And sometimes awakening brings out more stuff. That's interesting, right? So let me end with that passage from Dagpo Tashi Namgyal again, describing awakened awareness: open like the sky, pervasive like the earth, unshakable like a mountain, shining like a flame, lucid like a crystal. Let's just sit for a moment and see what's there for you, what resonated. See if you have anything you want to share, maybe an experience like that of awakened awareness. See if you have anything to share, any questions. Good, so let's open things up. If there anyone wants to share, ask a question. Recite a poem spontaneously. That's a lot of what Longchenpa does. You read his book, it seems like spontaneous poems coming out of awakened state. Pretty amazing. So you can use the raised hand function, or I think actually I can see everyone. If you want to raise your physical hand, that's fine too. Liz, please.
Thank you, Donald. In my own experience, these qualities, and I want to hear your opinion about this, of awakened awareness, of course, this happens during its developmental, as far as I'm concerned, in my own life, and pops up surprisingly, has surprised me a great deal. But going on retreat for me has been the way to do this awakened awareness. Although I did experience very deeply a year ago on a home retreat with Richard Shankman, I had a breakthrough which shocked me.
Yeah.
But yes, I was quite surprised and delighted after 25 years of practice. But for me, the depth of this happens on retreat. What do you think about that? That my deepest experiences have been when I've been sheltered and quiet and in that environment.
Yeah,
Consistent environment with a teacher.
Yeah, I think it generally in the tradition, there's the access to awakened awareness occurs with guidance from a teacher. That could occur outside of retreat. In many contexts, it did. You know, Achan Cha received instructions from Achan Moon just in conversation. That happens a lot in the Tibetan tradition as well. That being said, what retreat helps with is the growing stability of awakened awareness. One can access awakened awareness for a brief time pretty easily. We could do that actually right now if we wanted to. It would be on the brief side. What retreat helps with is the stabilizing. And that's where deepening and concentration, in my experience, plays a very significant role. And that's what you have in retreat. There's actually one Tibetan text where it says, you know, first access awakened awareness in meditation, stabilize it in retreat, formal meditation, and when that's occurred, bring it out into daily life, right? And so the stabilization plays a big role in terms of the support of retreat. Once you've experienced it a fair amount, maybe in retreat, without it even necessarily being really stable, you can still access it in daily life. It just might not last very long. You know, it might last for 5 seconds or 10 seconds. That's okay. There's kind of an uncanny development, which is quite interesting, in which it actually gets to be more stable, and which is I find mysterious when I, you know, both in my own history and then working with people. So retreats can play an important role, and they played an important role for me in terms of stabilizing, but they're not necessary to access it there, but they're very important for stabilizing it. Thanks, Liz. Sharing. Yeah, please, Tom.
Hi, Donald.
Hi, Tom. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I loved hearing you pair up social activism and deepening states of mindfulness and awakening, and even thinking of a program of teaching. I couldn't agree more that we all need that so much today. And at the same time, when you describe tonight this really open awareness, this signless awareness,
yeah,
it occurs to me that, oh my goodness, if I tried to do some kind of socially active program with signless open awareness, I don't know if I could get through it. I wonder if the two are really possible with that level of awakening.
I think the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Next question. Sorry. It's very interesting because when you look to the people who I was quoting, well, I mean, aside from the question of social action, all the people I was quoting did a lot of teaching. They talked with people. They did writing. Someone like Long Chenpa. And so they were, in other words, they were involved in complex activities involving concepts and, you know, identities, more conventional reality, right? And so, and presumably, they had some grounding in awakened awareness while they were doing that. And in my experience, it's something that one can learn, but it's not a beginning learning. It's the same way that probably initially when you were being mindful, it might have been hard initially to be mindful and also talk to someone, right? But over time, like even right now, you can be mindful of your body and listen to me, right? Whereas initially that was hard, right? So it's analogous to that, that, and in my experience, there has to be a fair amount of stability before you can bring it out into more complex activities. That's why they talk about bringing this out into daily life. And once you're doing that, that's not really fundamentally different from anything involving being an activist. So it's interesting though. And I actually, you know, in some of my own practice, I would have experiences where I would be with this awakened awareness. And then I would deliberately bring in conceptualizing, but would be bringing it in from a different perspective. Like I'd bring it in and look at a tree and think tree, you know, or bring in the concept, but there was a way that I knew that I was bringing in concepts. So I was doing it consciously. It didn't have the same quality as when I was wrapped up in the concept. If that, does that make some sense? So there can be a way that we can engage with the conventional world and still know that it's a kind of construction, but we do so for the sake of compassion. If everyone was grounded in awakened awareness, there wouldn't be so much need for activism. Although there'd be a lot of need now because we have to, if everyone immediately became awakened today, we still have to clean up the mess of the last 5,000 years. Yeah. Thanks, Tom. It's an interesting question. Thank you. You have time for one or two more? It could also be sharing maybe an experience that you had where you had some kind of opening to something like this awareness. Yeah, please, Deborah, please. You're still muted, Deborah.
Okay. I don't know if we would call this awakened awareness, but I had two kind of magical moments recently where I was on the phone with a friend, two different people, a few days apart, and I had this physical body experience and a sort of mental experience where I just felt spacious receiving this person, and I didn't have any judgments about them or about myself. It was just this, I'd never had this experience before in a real life. I don't think I've had this experience before in a kind of pedestrian daily thing where you're just talking and listening and trying to be there for somebody, but without personality. It was no personality, and it was just wonderful. I felt very, very lovely, very lovely.
A kind of pure receptivity and spaciousness and not much sense, not much or any sense of self.
Yeah, I just didn't feel my body shape or form or it was just.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely going in this direction, right?
And the person I was speaking with, in this one instance where there's some impatience on my part and some eye rolling on my part, it was gone. And there was just this sort of, open receptivity. I would even say love.
And that's where the quality of love, openness, and just naturally occurring. And do you connect it, as kind of a fruit of your practice, or just in some traditions it's called a moment of grace?
I'll vote for both of those.
Both, yeah. Yeah,
okay, and I would like to add, I would like for the Sangha is putting together its next issue of the newsletter, and I'd like your permission to quote you, quoting, I don't remember his name, but open like the sky, pervasive light. I would like us, if the editor, Barbara, sees fit, I think that would be something very beautiful to share again.
I'd love to, yeah. My mom really liked that too. When she said, please read that to me. And I would read it, and she would, she liked it so much that I made just a little stand-up, one of those stand-up things that my mom might put a photograph in, but I put the words in, which she kept it in her room, in her bedroom.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think what you're suggesting that's really important is that, these experiences can just happen at times. And I think as we saw when I asked for the show of hands before, they can just happen. When we practice like this, they will happen more often.
I was just going to say something, but I forgot what it was. Anyway, thank you. You always hit the nail on the head for me, and I'm very, very grateful. I'm always very delighted. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your sharing. I think, again, how many can relate in some way to what Deb was saying?
What it was I wanted to say that I forgot was that experience not only was, I was sort of having it, and then I became aware that I was having it, and this pleasurableness from it, but also the encouragement of having the aspirations and working toward them through whatever means on any given day that I can muster.
Yeah. Right. So you might really work with the intention every day. May I awaken? It's you're in the territory.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being willing to share that. So thanks, everyone. I think I may find some way to continue. There seemed to be some interest in having the experiential dimension of what I was exploring brought out more. So I'll consider that the next time I come.